Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Tom Moran here from Tom's Big Spiders. First off, the most obvious, Happy New Year to everybody out there. Hope everybody had a safe and happy New Year's Eve into New Year's Day. We actually had some beautiful weather here, got some stuff done, which was nice. So happy to put 2020 behind us. My Lord, it seemed like it was 2 years. It was like before the pandemic up until March when everything closed down for us, at least schools. And then afterwards, it's like in my mind, it's always going to be two different years, but obviously just a very miserable year all around between what's going on in the world, between the pandemic, between people we've lost or whatever. It's just been a rough one. So I think I don't think I've ever seen so many people so excited to bid farewell to a year. I will tell you, we're around here, we usually go to bed before midnight. I'm not big into the celebrations or anything on New Year's. I just try to treat it like it's another day, but we were up and enjoying it. We were so happy. We weren't even depressed. It wasn't even one of those deals. Sometimes it's that bittersweet, like, oh, another year's gone by. This was, thank God, let's get into this next year. So hopefully it's better for everybody. Hopefully, you know, the pandemic finally gets under control. We can all get out and about. It's funny, before this all went down, I think I mentioned this before, Billy and I were talking about the fact that I never hit any expos. We don't have any in Connecticut that feature tarantulas, but there are some in Massachusetts, New York. So I'm like, you know what? Maybe we'll go and hit a couple of these this year. It'd be kind of fun to get out there, you know, mingle a bit. And right when we were looking at one that we were going to attend, that's when this all started going down. And obviously that was canceled and we didn't get to go. Also dying to hit some concerts. I'm like, we had Rammstein tickets. So I've always wanted to see Rammstein. I've been a fan of them for years. And unfortunately that got shut down. We bought tickets for my son, who's, I'm a Slipknot fan as well. I don't mind admitting it. I know everybody kind of, it's very popular now to poo-poo them, but huge fan of Slipknot, have been for years, and my 17-year-old son is also a huge fan of them, so we bought him tickets for his birthday. That one got postponed, and then there were a bunch of other little ones with bands, smaller bands that I like that I was hoping to catch around here. Avatar, one of my favorite bands, tours every year. Billy and I have seen them, I think, five times, and we were hoping to get to see them with their new album. That's been put off, so just that's a big thing in my life, hitting the concerts. We love going to concerts, Billy and I, and now my son, we've kind of roped him into it because he's a big metal fan. Love hitting the concerts, and that's been a rough one, not being able to hit any concerts. And movies, can't wait to hit movies again. My God, it's been so weird a whole year without any, you know, Avengers movies or anything like that, Marvel movies. So anyway, just let's, fingers crossed, this year things turn around quickly. We can get back to some sense of normalcy and, you know, again, get out and mingle with people, have some fun, and put all this pandemic stuff behind us. So for this episode, to kick it off, the first thing is just to let everybody know that if you listen to my Nine Obscure, I think I call it Nine Obscure Uncommon Species I Keep videos, whatever it was, I put the video version of it up. So if you want to see what the ones look like that I was talking about, that is now up and live. And I've had a couple people pop over and I really appreciate it from the podcast. They're like, hey, I listened to the podcast, but I want to come over and see the pictures of them. And they admitted that it's every once in a while you do a podcast topic. And I think the Nine Obscure Species works as a podcast topic, but it is one of those ones that begs, you know, I think a lot of people got off immediately after listening to the podcast, or one person said they kept pausing it and looking up the spiders so they had a visual. So I do think this is one of those situations where the video might have a one-up on the podcast, only because you get to actually see the spiders. And I did think I caught some pretty good footage of them. They were all so well behaved. The only one I couldn't get out was my L. crotalis, which is one of the more elusive spiders I keep, but the rest of them were all out and just kind of sat there and posed. It was weird because I caught my Epachypus out, and that's, well, I catch those guys out every once in a while. They're not one of my most reclusive ones. I will come in and catch them sitting on top of the webbing. What they usually do is very cutely turn around and just very slowly go back down into their burrows. Well, in this case, I quickly turned around, grabbed a cricket, and threw a cricket on the webbing to see if it would hunt. It grabbed the cricket and then just sat on the top doing its happy dance and allowed me to get a lot of footage, which was great because it's some of the best shots I've got of this spider yet. I've caught him a couple times over the years, but this was some good stuff. So that was kind of the feature for me. Also, a lot of people seeing the Sericopelma species Santa Catalina. I got some really good, I think, footage of that one. Again, I do at some point got to upgrade my camera, but I think with the equipment I've got some new lighting now. I think I was able to really get those colors to pop, which was awesome because I had a few people come up after the video and say comments like, oh man, I passed on these guys. They are absolutely gorgeous. I wish I had picked one up, which is exactly what I'm looking for. Again, when I do videos like that, it's not a show-off thing like, ooh, look what I've got. It's more of, I like these guys. I would like to see more of them in the hobby. And the only way we're going to do that is if people get interested in them and breed them. And some of the ones I covered in that video, I honestly think could be hobby staples. If we bred them enough, I think there'd be spiders that would be inexpensive and people would absolutely love to keep and raise up, right up there with our typical beginner species, our, you know, Brachypelma, Faunapelma, Gramostola, things of that nature. These guys would be right up in there. Lasiodora, as species that people are, you know, really keen to keep, and one of those ones that everybody seems to have in their collection. So hopefully we'll get something out of it. I was kind of hoping that when I posted this up, I'd get some like emails back or some comments telling me where I could find some of these. I know the Epochipus, my gosh, if I ever find slings, I'll probably buy them all up because I'm dying to breed that one. But so far, nothing on the Epochipus. I really worry about that. My females are probably, yeah, they've got some time left, but hopefully at some point I'm able to get a male for him because I would definitely, that would be like my top breeding project right now is Epochipus. So hint, hint, if anybody sees anybody selling them out there, please let me know. Somebody thought they had somebody selling them a while back. And unfortunately, when I went and checked it out, it was a different species. It wasn't the stout leg baboon. It was something else, featherleg. It was a different species. It was an honest mistake. And then somebody supposedly had slings of them. But when I contacted the guy, he was out, but I didn't find any evidence that he had actually had the slings. I couldn't find the actual ad or whatever. So whatever, I'm hoping somebody will breed them some point over in Europe. I don't know what's going on, if anybody's got them over there, but I would love to see these guys more in the hobby. So anyway, video is doing well, which is great. You know, again, every once in a while I'd like to do something fun like this, but it's got to be informative at the same time. I just don't want to do a list to do a list. So this one I thought about for a while. A lot of people have asked about, and I'm glad I did it now because I do think there was a purpose to it. So we'll see about doing more of them in the future because they are kind of fun to put together. Although, my God, that took a while. I shot all the clips separately, so I had to edit all the extra clips, and I've been trying to do a little bit more with my editing, and it's just, you know, I'm not there yet. I'm still learning, still getting the hang of it, but it just one of those deals where I was so into it, I didn't realize I was up here working on the computer for like 4 hours straight, and you know, Billy was wondering where the heck I had gone. So fun to do. We'll definitely do another one in the future. One thing I want to mention also before we get into the actual brunt of the podcast is, although we have gotten rid of the dogs farting and the nails clicking in the background, which some people are upset about, we have picked up some crickets. So I'm just a heads up, I am in the tarantula room now, and it didn't occur to me until I did the first feeding, which was like, I literally done a feeding and then sat down to do a podcast and the crickets started. And it was like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. So I do have a thing on my program where I can filter out some background noise, but I don't know if it'll work completely as far as the crickets are concerned. We shall see. Moving ahead, I'll apologize in advance if you hear the crickets, but I guess it's just a nice little background ambient noise or whatever. So to get into the main topic for today, I've covered this one before, and I usually hit it around this time every year because this is usually the time I start getting these questions, but just basic winter FAQ as far as like it's kind of my annual PSA to people that, you know, have been in the hobby for a while, but also some that are just getting into the hobby, some things you don't think about as far as winter coming with your animals, and some topics that I get asked quite a bit about. So for example, I received an email the other day by somebody that was upset because I had recommended a dealer who refused to ship because it was too cold. And I have to tiptoe around these things sometimes because, you know, again, I'm not there to insult anybody or to hurt anybody's feelings, but I do get kind of upset when people don't put the well-being of the animal first. And I think, again, I've alluded to the fact that we all live in a society now where Amazon is like, if I want something on my, like 2 days from now, I can go on Amazon. Sometimes one day I can go on Amazon, order it, and it's at my doorstep in a day. And I think we've got this instant gratification where we feel like we want something, we want it right now. And it doesn't work that way with animals. So my big thing to just preface this is that if you're one of those people that can't wait a couple extra weeks to have an animal delivered safely, find another hobby. Find one that doesn't involve living creatures, because the truth of the matter is, these are not animals that do well in the cold. So when you're shipping in the cold, you're taking a chance with them. And a lot of good dealers, reputable dealers, will try to mitigate that risk by not delivering to homes if it's above or below. I mean, this goes the same thing for the summertime. It can't get too hot, but above or below certain temperatures, they will have it held at local FedEx shipping centers. They will not ship if it's a certain temperature, which is, again, these are all things to protect the animals. Nobody wants to get a box of dead frozen spiders in. And believe me, it's happened to me. It's horrific. Nobody wants that. So the reason they do this isn't to inconvenience people that are ordering, it's to protect the animals. So every once in a while, I'll get shot an email with somebody like, yeah, so-and-so, and it's different dealers all the time, but I always have to come back with, yeah, they're doing exactly what they should do. They are absolutely right. You need to learn some patience. You need to be able to wait for these things because you don't want to have them sent and put the animal in jeopardy. Again, we're dealing with live animals here, folks. We're not dealing with video games or whatever else you may be ordering online. These are animals that, if they get too cold for too long, will die. And then you have to think about the fact that this type of year, there are all kinds of shipping delays. How many people ordered something for Christmas this year for, you know, a friend or a loved one and had it delayed? It happens through FedEx. It happens through UPS. It's happened through U.S. Postal Service. They can all have these delays that, again, when the sweater you bought for your aunt gets delayed, who gets harmed? Maybe you're a little embarrassed because you don't have a gift in time, but whatever. Nobody's harmed by it. If your tarantula gets lost, and this has happened before, now you have a potentially dead tarantula that's stuck somewhere in the cold with the heat pack failing because you couldn't wait for it. So that's one thing I wanted to say. And again, I'm assuming the majority of people I talk to on here will agree with me and know exactly where I'm coming from. Yeah, absolutely. Matter of fact, last time I talked about this a bit, a lot of people came forward and like, oh yeah, I always tell them to wait. I have no problem waiting. But there are folks that are just getting into the hobby that don't realize how this works. They don't realize that when you order a tarantula, even if you pick, you know, next day shipping, that means when it's ready to ship, it will arrive the next day. That does not mean that if you order it on a Friday night, it's going to ship and be there by Saturday. It's not how it works. You have to pay attention to kind of those things. So that's something I just want to, again, we're not going to get huge into it because I've covered it before, but every year I get a lot of emails or get, you know, angry notifications or comments on a video about somebody saying, they took my money and they didn't ship my tarantulas. And it usually comes down to a temperature thing. So always know that if you're shipping in the winter, be patient, please, for the sake of the animals. We all get it. And I can't wait to get my stuff in, but I've also had boxes held 2 months because I was afraid of having a box of dead spiders, especially if it's for somebody I haven't ordered from before that I'm not sure how good their shipping is. There are people that just get into it that don't quite get all the little nuances of how to correctly pack a box so that you're taking, you know, a huge chance if you order from them. Just recognize the fact that the animal's health should always be first and make your decisions accordingly. It drives me nuts when people go, like, I had one person go, you know what, I'm just going to go order from, you know, Backwater Reptiles. No joke. They were upset because somebody wouldn't ship because it was too cold. And they were like, I'm going to order from Backwater Reptiles. Good luck, buddy. You're lucky if you get the species you order. You're lucky if you get the sex you order, and they're going to shove it in a box. It's going to be poorly packed. I've heard people from Backwater Reptiles being shipped spiders that were in little containers full of dirt. Imagine that, shipping them with dirt. And there's going to be no heat pack. You're lucky if you will receive a live spider at all. And they will. They'll ship anytime. They don't care. They'll ship anytime. So that part kind of drives me nuts sometimes because it puts me in an awkward spot where people are like putting me on the line, like, how do you recommend these dealers if they're not going to ship them? Because they take care of the spiders. That's what I'm, you know, my first priority is to make sure that if I send you to somebody, they take care of the spiders. They're not going to ship a spider out in the cold just to appease the fact that you have no patience. It's not how it works. So let's get that one out of the way. Just please remember, winter shipping is different than shipping other times of the year. It's kind of similar to really hot times in the summer too. We've talked about that before. It can be too hot for them because I've had people go, well, they won't ship them, but I thought they like it hot. Too hot will boil them alive. It'll kill them. So there is that perfect time, like in the fall, it's usually pretty nice to ship. The spring, it's usually pretty nice to ship. But whether on either side of the extreme, hot or cold, no go. And, you know, again, I've had them held personally myself. I've had people say, I've told dealers, I know you'll ship during this, but I'm going to have it held. So please show some patience. Next one I want to talk about, we get this one all the time, supplemental heat. Winter comes, people bought a bunch of tarantulas over the summer. It was nice and warm. Suddenly the cold weather arrives and they watch the temperature in their tarantula room that's been nice and high and toasty start to drop, and the panic sets in. We've all been there. I've been there myself. I started buying tarantulas, I believe it was like in the fall, but it was still kind of warm. And then we got them all in the room, and then I watched the temperature kind of creep down. I was like, uh-oh, here's the deal. We talk about room temperature and how they're comfortable if you're comfortable. And I know that's kind of misleading because there's some of us out there that could literally have a house that's 50 degrees and be comfortable in a t-shirt and feel totally fine. And there's other people that feel comfortable or don't feel comfortable if it drops below, like, say, 70. So there's a big kind of a fine line there. My thing is, it's usually you're looking at something mid to high 60s is fine for a tarantula. I think we panic when we start to see the temperatures dip into the 70s. But for the vast majority of species out there, something, you know, 60 65, 67 or around, you know, 19, 19.5 degrees Celsius is perfectly fine for them. Now, some things to think about if it starts to drop down a little lower. Now, if you get into like the low 60s sustained for a while, or in some places, some people have told me that their houses dip into the 50s, that would probably, I would say that's a bit too chilly. And if that's the case, then you start to need, you know, then you start to think of other things you could do. You know, we'll go through a couple different checklists you can go through before you actually use extra heat or supplemental heat. But anything in the 60s, the mid to high 60s, I'd say you're perfectly okay. The only species that seems to slow down a bit, and I've heard people complain that they don't do as well, is some of the avicularia. If it gets a little chilly, they kind of they web up, they don't eat as much, they become more lethargic. And that's one of those species, you know, the avicularia, I love avicularia, but that's one of those ones that seem to be a little less tolerant of some of the, you know, lower temperatures. If you look, you know, sudden avicularia death syndrome, I think a lot of it is to do with the fact that people kind of screw up the keeping of them, but I also think they are a little less tolerant of some of the extremes that other spiders will take, a little less adaptable. So that's something to keep in mind. But even them, higher 70s, higher 60s, you're perfectly fine. If it dips into lower, like I've had some people go, well, it dips, you know, it went to 62 the other night, but then it was right back up to like 68. It can dip a little bit. It doesn't matter, as long as it isn't a sustained dip. Now, if your tarantula room, if you're looking at your tarantula room and you've watched it go from 70, 68, 67, 65, 60, all the way down, and now you've kind of got sustained low 60s, yeah, you may want to consider some other options as far as what to do with them, because that's a little bit low. But some things to think about before you go to supplemental heat. Number one, try a different room. I know for some people that's not convenient, and I totally understand. I've spoken to people that, you know, they rent an apartment in an older drafty house and there really is no other place to put them or no other room that's any warmer. Completely understood. But some of these older houses, what you find is one room is very toasty. Like my old house was like this. One room would be very toasty. The other rooms would be chilly. And the I was very lucky that the tarantula room was one of the ones that stayed pretty toasty, while my living room, if it got cold out, would be kind of chilly while the heat tried to keep up. That's what you want to do, is kind of go around and get a feel for, especially if you have a smaller collection. Is there another room you could keep them in, even just for those few winter months? It doesn't have to be all year. It could be something you just temporarily, like winterizing your collection, temporarily move your collection to another room. You know, have some shelves in there all ready to go where it's a little bit warmer, where the sustained temps are a little bit higher. And that's a trick that I've spoken to some people. I know somebody has a smaller collection. She says she keeps it mostly in her living room of her apartment, but during the wintertime, the living room gets chilly and there's people going in and out. So she moves the collection to her bedroom, which I guess her boyfriend is okay with now, wasn't okay with it first. But there's a situation where it's like, all right, we're going to work with what we've got. That way she didn't want to have to heat. She didn't want to use a space heater because it could be expensive, totally understood. So she said she moves into her bedroom where it's usually about 5 degrees higher, which is makes all the difference in the world. The other thing we talk about is even in one room, I've seen pictures where people have them set up on shelves and they're kind of lower to the ground. Keep in mind all ways that heat rises, and if you measure temperatures during different or at different heights in a room, you will notice that down by the bottom it's much cooler, down by the top it's much warmer. And I've had situations, my old tarantula room, the lower shelves would be like right around the 69-70 degree mark, the higher shelves could be 78 to 79. There was that much of a temperature differential between the two regions. So I got very good at strategically putting ones like my slings would go a little higher up because I wanted them to be a little warmer during the winter, so my mature males would be a lower one. Some of the other species that I knew it wasn't really going to impact them if it dropped a little bit would be on the lower shelves. Use the proximity to the top of the room as a way to kind of mitigate those lower temps. If you go around your room and measure, or go around your house and measure, you will find different rooms get warmer, different heights in those rooms get warmer. Use that to your advantage when setting up, because sometimes it's just a matter of raising them a couple feet. You can raise them a couple degrees and avoid having to get into using some type of supplemental heat source. Now, if you've done this and you looked, and I've spoken to people, I've a lot of people, oddly, from, I mentioned this before, from Scotland. A lot of times they'll be like, yeah, my living room gets to like 55 degrees. And I'm like, what country are you in? It's like Scotland. That seems to be a popular one. That people in the U.S., a lot of folks are live in older houses where there's drafts and stuff. Yes, that could be. And you always, here's something you want to always be careful of, is make sure you're not sitting them by a place where a draft can come through. There was a situation years ago where somebody came to me troubleshooting. They had bought an avicularia. Everything, the temperature in the room was like 72 or so. It seemed to be like a perfect environment for this tarantula. And they set it up in a little, I believe it was one of the ExoTerra nanos or whatever. Long story short, the thing was just curled up. It wasn't moving. It was lethargic. It was, we couldn't figure out what was going on with it. And the guy sent me a picture. And in the picture, it was sitting next to, you could look like a shade or a curtain. It looked like there was possibly a window there. So I said, can you do me a favor? Just, you know, is there a draft coming through the window perhaps? Well, there was a bad draft. And what was happening is it was coming in chilling the tarantula, and that was kind of putting it in standby mode. He said it was a really bad draft. So you want to make sure that when you set up your tarantulas, make sure there isn't a situation where you put them by a drafty door. Like if they're right near the front door and you open it up in the wintertime, they're going to get blasts of cold air, which is not going to be healthy for them. Strategically look for spots that are safer and avoid those draft type environments where you're going to get a window or door coming in cooling them off. Now, if you get to a point where, again, we have one of these houses where there's drafts regardless, there's no place you can't, there's no good way to keep them warm in with what you got with just the general heat running, and you have to look at supplemental heat. Just right off the bat, do not use heat lamps. I've just got an email the other day with somebody who had set up their tarantula, said, look, it's doing great, and the tarantula was curled up in the top corner. It was, I believe, an avicularia, and there was a heat lamp above it. And I was like, oh, man, that's a, you know, nice setup, but you got to get rid of the heat lamp. And he's like, what do you mean? It's warm. It loves it. I'm like, it's going to love it to the point where it dehydrates. Heat lamps are bad. They dry everything out. They will hug a heat source. The tarantulas will gravitate toward a heat source. And the problem is if they get too dehydrated, they lose their ability to move. And then they're kind of sitting ducks for it. So you do not want to use heat lamps. I have used heat lamps in a way where I have them on a snake and I use the proximity of where I set the cages that gets a little of the, you know, heat that's rising out of the snake cage and kind of heats it up. But I'm very careful with that. And I have spoken to others that have done things where they've used a heat lamp, not directly on the tarantula enclosure, but in the proximity to just kind of warm the overall air up. Just be careful with that, that it doesn't get too hot, because the problem is it, on a colder day where the room's a little chillier, that works great. If the temperature suddenly goes up and you get a much warmer day and that thing's still running, you could end up with a baked tarantula. So all in all, you try to avoid heat lamps, definitely avoid heat rocks. I haven't heard many of those in the past couple of years, but back in the day, I'd get people that, you know, I used to keep reptiles, so I know what the heat rocks look like. And it would be like a G. rosea on top of an obvious heat rock. It's like, ooh, you got to get that out of there. Again, they'll fry. The way to do it when you're trying, when you have to heat them, the best way to do it, number one, safest way, is some type of space heater. One of the ones I have, one of the stand-up ones, or used to have one in my other house that was the stand-up oil fill ones. They have the tip protection, so if it tips over, it automatically shuts off. They have a thermostat right in the front. You can control the temperature. The best way to do it is to heat the room. Now, for people that don't mind paying a little bit, my theory is if you're keeping the animals, yes, is it going to cost more money with electricity? Yes, it definitely, you could see an impact on your electric bill. We could see an impact on our electric bill when we use one. However, my theory was this was part of like when you own an animal, you know, you have to, like for a dog example, you're paying for food, you're paying for veterinary care, you're paying for grooming perhaps. I just kind of lumped it in with the cost of this is what it costs to maintain my collection. So it's like, all right, it's going to cost me an extra $25, whatever it was a month, so be it. I get for some people where money's tight, that's not an issue, but I will say that's the most efficient way to do it. Other people will mention the fact that they're in the room that the tarantulas are in and they don't want it to be that much warmer. And that's one of those situations where it's like, all right, I get it. It's just, it's probably the safest way to do it. I did it for many years, just added. Now mine was just adding a little bit of heat to it. And the only reason I added a little heat to my room is I was getting to the point where I was starting to do a lot more of the Tom's Big Spider stuff. And my room did get kind of chilly during the winter time. It was slowing down growth rates and it's kind of hard to write about spiders that aren't growing very much. So I did add a little heat in there just to keep things above the 70 mark, because it used to get down to like 67 or so. And then as time went on, I started doing breeding and stuff. I would bring it up a little bit during, you know, if I ever had a female with a sac, for example. But for the most part, you know, I've gotten away without it. Absolutely. I did for quite a few years. So for those that, you know, number one, if we're going to go supplemental heat, number one best way to do it would be one of those heaters. Just be aware that some of the ones out there, if you unplug them, the thermostat, when you set them, if it's digital, naturally resets, and mine resets to like 95 degrees, which did cause an issue once. We had a situation where we had a brief power outage and it obviously turned off the heater. And when it turned back on, I basically hit the power button and let it go back on and we went to bed. And I woke up the next day and the heater had naturally gone on. Its starting temperature was 95 degrees. So we came down there and the tarantula room, it was ridiculously hot. And this was right around the time where I had a Carabina Versicolor with a sack. it was a nightmare. So we were very careful after that to recognize that if you unplugged it for any length of time, it reset to that higher temperature. So be careful if you use one and you have one like that, because that could result in baked tarantulas. But that's about it. And you can buy things for them. I have a thermostat now that you plug it into that will naturally reset and make sure that that doesn't ever happen. You set the thermostat and that one holds it's got battery powered, so it holds its charge. And even if the power goes out and it comes back on, it keeps it in the right spot. So invest in something like that. You'll be perfectly set. Now, the one thing you don't want to do besides using heat lamp is try to heat individual cages. That is also not advisable and not how to go about it. I've had people go, all right, well, I want to keep this one a little warmer. I want to heat these slings. That's not a good idea. The best bet is if you need supplemental heat to rig something up where you're heating a larger enclosure. Some people will get I've had people that go on Craigslist and pick up a big old aquarium and they heat the aquarium. So that way they're heating a larger area and they can place the enclosures in it and control that. That's the way to go about it. However, you want to be careful for that too, because you need to have it made sure that it's on a thermostat or rheostat, whatever the word is for it, that you can set the heat and that it won't go beyond that heat. Because I've heard horror stories of people doing it. And this is why I don't encourage people to heat if they don't have to. The bottom line, if your temperatures are high 60s, mid to high 60s through the winter, you're probably perfectly fine. It's one of those deals where people will just, I get it, because again, I just admitted that at one point we started adding heat in my house because I wanted it a little warmer, I wanted to grow a little faster. But if you can't heat the whole room, going down and trying to heat the individual cages, this can get tricky, because if that thermostat fails, you end up with baked spiders. I've heard many horror stories over the years of people who tried to rig something up like a little incubator, or little things that were heated for their tarantulas, something malfunctions, and suddenly they come home and all their spiders are dead because they've been baked. This happens every so often, and when it does, it's always a terrible story. There was one person, they moved into a new house and they were afraid that it was a little cooler than their other room, but not bad, and they said they wanted to make sure that their tarantulas had the same temperature. So they rigged up, basically they bought a curio and rigged it up with heat so that it would go through. And they did use, I will say they used heat lamps, but they had the tarantulas lower down so the heat lamps wouldn't directly hit them. It would just kind of heat up the inside of the thing to like 70 something degrees and then it would click off. What happened was the rheostat wasn't working. The thing just kept heating and heating and heating. It got warmer outside, so you had a warmer temperature in the actual room. They came home, opened the cabinet, and they said, as soon as I opened the cabinet, I felt the burst to heat, and I'm like, oh no, and they lost the majority of their collection because of it. So my thing is, the people who try to heat that don't need to, you're assuming an unnecessary risk as far as I'm concerned. I know you think in some cases the idea is to help, like they'll be better, it'll be better for them if it's warmer, it'll be safer for them, they'll grow better, they'll have better living conditions if it's warmer, but sometimes that's not the case because it can be tricky to set one of these systems up. Now I'm sure there's people out there, feel free to chime in, if you've got a system that works, I get people asking me all the time how to set something up, and I don't really have anything that I use currently, although I'm creating one for my Scorpion, so I'll be able to post that, but I don't have anything I can post that I've done personally, so feel free to post up on Facebook any pictures to help people out that want to set these up. The best way I've seen to do it and the way I would probably do it is the method where you use a larger aquarium or a larger structure that you can put them in and use a heat mat, and not one that's going to get super hot. A heat mat, what you're going to try to do is just knock the edge off. So this is for people that are in a situation where, you know what, it's in those low 60s, sometimes dips to 50, and they just need to raise the temp a little bit to make it comfortable for them. You take the heat mat and you basically mount a piece of foam behind it. You can affix it to a wall and you adjust the enclosures where they are in front of it. So that way, if you look at these, if you've ever felt these heat mats, they don't give off a whole lot of heat off the bat. It's not like it's radiating, a lot of heat off of it, which makes them a little safer. And you can rig these up using a rheostat so they don't get too hot. And then you just arrange the enclosures inside so that they're a certain distance away from them, so you know they're not going to get too much heat. The idea is just to take the chill off. And I've seen, people do it with cabinets. I've seen the ones mostly aquariums, like glass aquariums. You can put foam around the outside and kind of trap the heat inside. But the idea is you're going to heat a larger object, or if you're going to do the method with the heat pad on a shelf, you take the large heat pad, you mount it to a piece of foam, you mount it on the wall, and you arrange your containers in front of that so they're just getting a little bit of heat. But those, again, that's not something I've done personally. It's not something I've had to do. So for folks that have methods, please explain, feel free to come back and say, hey, all right, my temperatures were in the high 50s and this is what we put together. The trick is you need to be upset that you want to get a quality rheostat. Some of those reptile ones they sell, like the ZooMed and stuff, are garbage. I years ago, almost baked a snake with one because I bought one. I had a heat lamp I wanted to use with a snake. I bought one of those rheostats. It failed. It had the heat lamp running full blast the entire time. It didn't. It was supposed to basically cut out when it got too hot. It didn't. So be very careful of those, because if your rheostat fails, you can have a situation where you bake your tarantulas alive. But that's the best way to do it. If you find out that you have to heat it, heat a larger area and then put them in it. Do not try to heat individual cages. Try to use heat elements that don't heat up a lot. Like, you don't want to, like, again, that's why I think of the reptile heat mats, because use some of the heat mats. They give off just enough to kind of warm things up a little bit. They'll take the chill off the air, but they shouldn't, even if they're running full blast, shouldn't bake the tarantulas. But experiment with that. Do a little research. Find out, talk to people that have used it and find out what to do. Don't go into it blind, because you don't want a situation where you set this thing up, you set your tarantula, your prized tarantula collection in there, everything's going great, you get a warm day, something malfunctions, you end up with dead spiders, because that would be absolutely horrific. So just to be clear, easiest way, space heater, try to arrange it. I know it can be difficult, I know, but put some money aside, you know, don't buy coffee for a little while over the week if it's a monetary, because I hear a lot of people, and I get it, the extra electric bill, we pay enough for electricity, and they're like, I really don't want to pay more, but it's the easiest and safest way to do it, because you're doing the whole room, and you're going to know when you walk into that room if it's too hot right off the bat. If you can't do it that way, the other way is to somehow heat a larger container, cabinet, aquarium. And again, all you're doing is knocking the chill off. You're not going, I would not encourage people to go, you know what, I want really, and this is where people get themselves into trouble. They hear about, well, if they're kept at 80 degrees, they'll grow even faster. So they try to put something together to really jack up the temperatures. That's when you're going to find yourself getting into trouble. I would not encourage, if you're going to try to raise them at 80 degrees to get that faster growth rate, I don't know, maybe you're doing breeding. And again, if you're breeding, that's another ball game. If you're trying to do breeding, they do need some warmer temperatures. If you're going to do that, then you need to heat the whole room. You definitely don't want to try to build something small that's going to heat it up that much. That's just begging for something to go wrong. But that would be the next step, is to find something, a cabinet, an aquarium, heat that instead. But do not try to heat individual cages. Do not use heat lamps. Do not use heat rocks. And always try those other things first. Try a different room. Try a higher shelf. Try other things before you add the heat, because there is a danger involved. No matter what you got, no matter how reliable it is, if it malfunctions once, that all it takes, it almost happened with Billy and I, trust me. And that would not only would have been all my tarantulas that could have possibly died, that sack, it would have been a nightmare. So be careful with the heating. Now, one thing we haven't covered before really explicitly, but something to look forward to on the topic of winter, is winter behaviors from tarantulas. You will sometimes find that some of your tarantulas will completely change their behaviors or their patterns, and that's normal. What happens is, even if I was able to maintain the same temperature in my tarantula room all year long, the majority, a lot of my teas would recognize subtle differences in season. Some of them just know. They have like internal clocks. They recognize changes in pressure. They recognize changes in humidity, because think of it, when it's hot in the summer in Connecticut, the humidity usually goes up at some point, and we usually get some humidity in the winter. Even if I jack the temperature up in that room to 85 degrees to mimic what would be like in the summer, perhaps on a really hot day, it would also dry out the air to the point that it would be very, very low humidity, and they seem to pick up on that. So I have certain ones that really seem to key in to the climate, the seasonal changes. I have ones that right around October, I see that they will start showing some of these signs of, yep, they recognize it's winter. And this obviously was a big issue back in the day with G. porteri, G. rosea, the Chilean species that people would bring in. The majority of them were wild caught. They would be brought into the hobby. And what would happen is they had this trigger where they recognized where it would be winter time and they would shut down. That's where you get these long fasting periods. I've seen the same thing with my Afanopelma calcotis, Nikki, that she used to every year, almost like clockwork, it didn't matter if it was particularly cold out or not, she would bury herself and hibernate. We'll use the term hibernate. She wasn't really hibernating, but she'd disappear and start fasting from about late October to the very beginning of April. She'd take all that time off. She's now since abandoned that behavior, which I kind of miss. It was kind of cute. But some things you can look for when the winter months come as far as your tarantulas, because I've been getting a lot of questions about this lately. Some will become more reclusive. Your fossorials may close off their burrows. They may hide for a while. They may bury themselves for a while. Some of your Afanopelma species will do the same thing. A lot of my Afanopelmas during the winter times burrow and disappear for a bit. Some of your, basically your beginner species, the majority of your beginner species can have this trait where they recognize the seasonal changes. They slow down. They don't eat as much. You may get the fasting. They become more reclusive. I've often warned people about M. balfouriae, my communal. During the wintertime, I rarely see them out. During the summer, you come in the morning, a bunch of them are out and about. They seem to recognize when it's winter, when it gets warm, a little cooler, drier, and I don't see them at all. And I've talked to other people that have said that theirs, right around the wintertime, when it starts getting cold, disappear for a bit. This is normal behavior, and a lot of different species will do this. I couldn't, somebody once, can you tell me a list of ones that will do this? I couldn't. It depends on the spider. It depends on, you know, the specimen. Certain species it seems to be a little more prevalent with, but any spider could do this. Some of them slow down a bit. Now, my Formictopus continue to eat like mad. My, you know, Pamphibidius continue to eat. A lot of them will be perfectly fine, but some of those, you know, New World species especially will disappear, and some of my fossorial species will disappear. So that's something to recognize when it happens around wintertime, and, you know, you're worried they were eating great all summer, and all of a sudden winter comes, and they've slowed down. You don't see them as much. That could be what you're seeing. That's very normal behavior, and usually what happens is right around April around here, obviously seasons are different depending on where you are, but when it starts to warm up, I start to see some of these guys come out, and then they start eating again. My G. pulchripes, I had those for you. I've raised three of them from tiny slings to subadults, adults, and when I first got them, they would disappear like October and resurface again like April, May sometimes, like really late on. So that was another species that did it. So just be aware, slings will do it, adults will do it, different species will do it. It's something to just be cognizant of, that it's not need to panic. And I'll still get emails for this, and I totally understand it, but that's what you're most likely seeing, them reacting to the arrival of winter. They know, they recognize it. And for some of the species, it seems to be very programmed into them, very instinctual. So they do what they would do when they were in the wild, where food would become scarce, where it might be drier, where it might be colder. They bury themselves and they disappear for a while. Totally normal behavior. So definitely expect that as you go, you know, make notes of it. One thing I tell people too is always keep a little journal, keep notes of this stuff, because what you'll end up seeing is it'll happen one year, and the next year it'll happen again. And sometimes you're able to look back and go, oh, it did the exact same thing. This is what happened with Nikki. I was able to track it when she did it again. I'm like, wait, she buried herself? I didn't think she was done eating yet. And I went, oh no, this is the seasonal thing. I obviously don't even have to write stuff down anymore because I have my YouTube videos. I can usually go back and look at that, listen to old podcasts and pull information. But that's one good reason to kind of do some tarantula journaling, take notes so you can look at stuff like this and recognize it when it happens. And then the final point is the winter time. I know it's chillier, but it also means heaters are running. So be extra diligent as far as making sure water dishes are full, making sure that your moisture dependent species have an adequate layer of moisture on the bottom. Remember, it's not about keeping the top moist. It's about keeping those bottom levels moist so they can burrow down to them. But extra diligence is needed. Slings and smaller enclosures, you know, be extra careful with those. I have some in dram vials, which are usually pretty good with trapping in the moisture, but if you poke too many holes in the top, what you'll have is you'll notice those things drop rather quickly. You want to make sure that you're checking them more often in the winter time. In the summer, I don't say, you know, obviously it can get hot in the summer. If it's hot in the summer, you got to do the same thing, make sure they stay well hydrated. But the winter, it's extra imperative. If you're running a fireplace, if you've got forced hot air, any type of heat, it's drying out the air. That air in turn dries out the enclosures. You don't want to end up with a dehydrated tarantula. So extra diligence during the winter time, making sure that they stay well hydrated, because that's usually when I get the emails and the comments about mysterious deaths, and it looks like, you know, the tarantula's in a death curl because it was dehydrated, and it's because they, you know, underestimated how much moisture was being pulled out because of the heat. So always be careful of that. So that should about do it for my annual winter FAQ. Again, it's not so much repeating myself, but there's certain topics that you almost need to revisit every year. And if it takes a podcast episode to do it, so be it. And these are ones I point out to people that will, you know, when they email me these questions, I'll say, hey, check out this link to this podcast. You can hear my thoughts on it. But they're all things I think we can all be reminded of. I know the other day I went around, we have the new house, and I'm still getting the hang of it. We have the temperature here, which is much more stable than it was at the other house, which is great. But I also realized it's drying out the air. And I went around the other day, and it had been about a week, and I went to some enclosures, and I noticed that the water dishes were, one of them was dry flat out, and one of them was getting close to dry. So I need to be a little more cognizant of making sure I check things a little more often up here, which is actually easier because it's spread out more. It takes me hours less to do my feedings now that I have this new situation. I have a cart that I walk around with, take them all down, feed them. It's been working great. But everybody needs a reminder every once in a while. And again, if you're ordering, patience, guys, patience. The spiders are going to come. They're not stealing your money. They're not trying to screw you over. It's trying to protect, you know, the spiders in their business, quite frankly, because if they keep shipping people dead spiders, then people are going to go complain, hey, I got these spiders in the mail. It was 0 degrees in my house. They shipped them and they're dead. Well, no kidding. So that's a good thing. When you have a dealer that does that or a vendor that does that, thank them for it. Thank them for taking it seriously, the fact that these are living animals and that it's not about instant gratification. You can wait a little while to get them. Believe me, I get it. I get excited about getting stuff in the mail too. But with my animals, I don't care how long I have to wait. I want live, healthy animals coming in. So that will do it for this one. As always, you can find me on thomasbigspiders.com. You can find me on YouTube under Tom's Big Spiders for those that haven't checked out the video. Again, it's not a promotional thing. It's just I know some people wanted to see pictures of the spiders in the 9 obscure/uncommon ones that I keep. Feel free to check it out. That'll do it for this one. As always, have a great one, and we'll catch you guys all next time.